Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Finding someone who shares your values in today's culture isn't easy, and being single around the holidays isn't easy either. That's why Catholic Singles created a website and app where single Catholics can meet and get to know each other that focuses on values, activities, and interests. For over two decades, Catholic Singles has been fostering deep relationships because your faith matters. Start today at CatholicSingles.com. That's CatholicSingles.com.
Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
In this AudioCast 37, I'm going to be spinning the yarn with a couple of cool blokes. I'll explain if you just sit back and...
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. It is good to be with you, and more importantly, good to bring to you some interesting people that I meet in my journeys. I just returned recently from a trip in Australia, and I know that you heard recently a show from some pretty cool people out in Australia, but I was in the big city. And so this time around, I'm actually going to be going to a pretty smallish town called Toowoomba. That's about 1,000 miles northwest of Sydney. The next closest big city would be Brisbane. I went to this place because I was invited to speak to a community of people about, you know, the work that I do with food and faith and all that stuff. And there were a couple interesting people who showed up. You know, it was a weekday, and so I wasn't expecting anyone to even show up, but there were a lot of people who did, and it gave me a chance to meet some folks out there who had some pretty unique jobs. You see, one of the things I love doing is trying to figure out what normal people do in their environment, because their environment is so abnormal to me. And so for me to talk to people who are just absolutely different, that's exactly what I do. In this week's little appetizer, I'm just setting it up for you. I'm gonna actually spin the yarn with a couple of blokes, which basically means shoot the shiitake with a couple of dudes. I'm gonna be introducing to you James, Constable Steven, and for our special premium subscribers, you're gonna hear from Wes Hitzke and his conversion to the Catholic faith. But between now and then, I just want you to enjoy, if anything, our conversation. Make sure that you enjoy these accents from these pretty cool guys in the land down under, but on the upper side of it, all the way out in Toowoomba. Get ready for a deep dish discussion when we return in just a moment. This episode is brought to you by Catholic Speakers Organization. It's a place where you can find the nation's leading Catholic speakers, musicians, and presenters. You can simply find out who your next presenter is going to be for your venue or church event. Just go to CatholicSpeakers.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake. With me, your host, Father Leo. I've got a special guest. He had no idea he was going to get interviewed, but guess what? I sat with him at lunch and discovered that he is a rancher, as we would call it in the United States, but here they would call it grazier. And so we have got James Brennan here. He is a full-time grazier. And tell our audience here where we are, Toowoomba. It's about 1,000 miles northwest of Sydney. How would you describe it?
The property?
Yeah.
We've got 4,600 acres.
Oh no, Toowoomba as a city.
Toowoomba as a city. A medium city for Australia.
Is it considered country? Is it considered prairie? What?
I would say it's a city. It's becoming more and more like a city because of the growth. But it's not quite in the...
it's not a metropolitan.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so...
But like what would be like a city thing? Is it because there's traffic, a lot of cars, or is it just because there's more people living in this area? Why are they? Why would they come to Toowoomba?
I don't know. it's a more of an old population, I'd say. It's a lot of old people live in Toowoomba. A lot of the young people move away, go to Brisbane or one of the big cities. But yeah, I think Toowoomba's...
And you've stayed. You're about how old, James?
I'm 19.
You're 19 years old. You're staying because obviously you're with your own family and you're full-time as a rancher. Let me ask you, besides being a grazier, are you a student? Are you in school?
No, I'm not studying anything.
Okay. You're not studying anything. Nope. Okay. Kind of good for you. Lucky you. What do you do for fun around here?
I like to travel to the Gold Coast, go to the beach.
The Gold Coast?
Yeah, because it's only a 2-hour drive from here to the coast. Anything from national parks, I like to go for walks or go for wheel driving.
A lot of outdoorsy thing?
Yeah, outdoor sort of stuff.
But most of your time is as a grazier.
Yes.
So explain what exactly that looks like. You've got how much land again?
4,600 acres.
It's a lot.
Yep. It's about an hour south of Toowoomba.
Okay.
We have...
What time does your day start?
Every day is different. I would say we usually would get out by 8.
8 in the morning?
8 in the morning. Okay. We'd get out and do whatever, from fencing to cattle work. It just depends on the day.
Okay. Do you like doing it?
I love it, yeah. It's
So this is your job?
Yes.
And your primary work is to just make sure that the cattle, and are they beef or are they milk?
Beef.
Okay, beef cattle.
We breed them. So
you breed them?
Cows, bulls, calves.
Okay, there you go. And your job is to make sure that they're eating.
Yeah, make sure there's feed and make sure they don't get out for fences, make sure they're where they should be because cattle need to be rotated. They'll eat out of paddock. The grass will get low and then you move them to the next paddock, let that paddock regrow, and they'll be eating the grass in the next paddock.
Okay. It's a lot harder than it sounds though, doesn't it?
I would say so, yeah.
Tell me what exactly are the most challenging things you do as a grazier, besides having to wake up super early.
Droughts. If there's droughts, and it's usually in the middle of summer when it's very hot, 45 degrees sort of up. If the dam's dried up, there's mud, and the cattle get stuck in the mud and they can't be left, so you got to go out.
They get stuck in the mud.
Yeah, well, they walk into the dams to try and get water and they'll sink.
Oh, my gosh.
Into the mud and be stuck.
How often does that happen during the drought season?
We had it this year. We had it a couple of years ago as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, cows are not very smart, or are they? I've heard that they're stupid.
They can be very stupid, yeah, but they can be a smarter cow as well.
So okay. Have you ever heard of the Far Side cartoons?
No, I haven't.
They have. Anyway, I'll post one up on my website so you can see it. It's like cows have like personalities and they can actually talk. And so some of them are like, one scene is they're kind of smoking and kind of talking. And then one guy on the lookout says, car, car, car. And the next moment they're like grazing like normal cows as the car has passed by. So that's kind of what it reminds me of, because you're saying cows have a personality. But I think if you're working with animals, you've got to have a personality. What would be the reason why you like it as opposed to some people would absolutely hate it?
I like being in the country, in the nature, and working with...
Do you like being alone?
Not necessarily. I prefer working with someone.
Okay.
Just one, or it can be more, but usually just I like to have someone out there. Not all the time. Sometimes it's good to get off by yourself, but to do something with someone, it's usually a lot.
Did you grow up doing this?
Since I was about 7.
Since you're about 7. Yeah. So when you were 7 years old, were you like, dang, I love cows?
Yeah, I loved I was keen for it because I'd been on my grandparents' property before that. So
okay, so literally, you were 7 years old. Who brought you out, your dad or your grandparents?
Dad.
Okay, your dad brought you out because he's a professional grazier, over 500 heads, right?
Yeah, about 500
heads. 500 head, okay. And he brought you out because he owns the property, and he said, James, this is all yours.
Don't know about that, but this is all yours to help me run.
But you have like how many siblings?
4 siblings.
4 siblings.
Yep.
Do they help?
My sisters are studying in Sydney. My youngest, Thomas, is He's about 11, and he helps now. He's just sort of coming into
Wait a minute. You were 7, for goodness sakes. He's starting out late.
Well, he had started out, but he's just starting to help a bit more.
So, I mean, I'm a city guy, so yeah. I know nothing about this. 101, basic 101. You wake up, you get yourself ready, you put on a big belt buckle and some cowboy boots and a big hat, and then you go out. Like, how do you get out there? Do you ride a horse?
We operate with either utes for fencing, or if we're out
to do a task. What's
a ute? A ute is like, I think you call it a truck.
A truck?
Just like a four-wheel drive.
Okay, like a truck, yeah. Like a pickup truck?
Yeah, pickup truck. Okay. So we call them utes.
Utes, okay.
So we get in the ute, and if it's fencing or a task, you know, tortoning, whatever there is to do, that's what we're going. If it's
how do you know what task to do, though? I mean, like, who goes out there and it's like a project manager that says, "Yeah, today we are going to be producing, you know, some fences." I mean, like, how do you even know what happens next then?
Well, ultimately, you're trying to produce feed for the cattle and water for the cattle and maintain your fences. So,
but is there somebody kind of overlooking everything? Yeah, I mean, do you send a drone out or anything?
No.
You don't do that?
We do get on the bikes, scout around, check all the fences every now and again.
So you're on a motorcycle.
Yep.
And you're just kind of riding around and being like, hey, I got to fix this fence.
Yeah, so scout it out, find what's broken,
so
find what needs
constant
doing.
Maintenance.
Yeah.
Constant maintenance, but also kind of predicting where the troubles are going
to
be.
And trying to do land improvement at the same time.
And land improvement, which means what? I mean, like,
well, you can have rocky country that's just sort of covered in little tiny sucker trees that do no good for anything. They're not good timber. They're not good for anything. So you have to sort of clear it.
What's the busiest time for you? Like, is mating season? Is there a mating season for cows? I have no
idea.
There should be.
We should. Usually you would have bulls in a paddock and you would let them out at a certain time so all the cattle get in calf at the same time.
Okay, so sorry to interrupt with this, but are you like collecting sperm and sending
it
to them? Okay, because I know people who do that. I want to interview them because it sounds really awkward. But they literally collect sperm and they send it out to people in order to breed, but you don't do that.
No.
Because that would actually make me vomit in my mouth, to be honest with you. Anyway, so you lock them up, they're all getting all hot and bothered. It's about that time for them to go out and mate.
And you let them out.
And you'll let them out. And let the bulls out. Yeah, so the bulls go to town.
And then all the cattle are getting calved at the same time. Calving at the same time so you can mark them at the same time. It's a much better process. Though you need the fences, good fences to maintain the bulls, whereas we don't really have those fences.
Okay, you don't have those fences. Okay.
No. So all the bulls and cows and stuff are all sort of in with each other all year round.
So they are just making bacon all year long.
Calves popping out everywhere.
Do you have to deliver calves?
No. We do a...
Because I've seen that on TV. It's pretty nasty.
We sort of let it happen naturally.
But how about if it's breached? Because that's, for whatever reason, I always seem to watch them deliver a cow that's breached. And that doesn't... Yeah, I just had lunch. Let's not talk about that. Okay, so anyway, the breeding process takes place all year round for you.
Yeah.
And so it's busy all year round.
That's right.
And then what is, though, the most challenging time for you? I mean, is there like a seasonal thing?
I would say... Winter's more challenging because there's a lack of feed for cattle. All the grass sort of dries off, frosts and all that. Whereas in summer, it may be hot, but there's always feed.
Okay.
So as long as there's no drought accompanying it as a seasonal thing without the droughts or floods or whatever, usually I'd say it'd be winter when it's driest and hard for feed. And sometimes you have to buy in feed to feed the cattle in that.
Okay. And so like with 500 of them, that sounds like an incredibly difficult task to do. I mean, like even feeding a family of 5 is one thing, but having to feed like 500 cows.
When you have to feed them, when we have to buy in the food because we lack the feed, it's very busy. Every single day you're bucketing enough feed to catch up, feed.
What did you say with bucketing? That sounds...
Bucketing is, and we use 20 liter buckets,
cotton seed.
We'll bucket out cotton seed, take out multiple buckets to the cattle, a lot of it.
Why would anyone do this job? Why do you do this? Besides being out in the nature, because you could be a park ranger.
I could be a park ranger. I find I'm producing something I feel good about.
Okay.
I'd say...
Now, what do you say about people would be like, and this is not in any way an insult, but they would say, oh my gosh, who would ever want to do a job like that? You got to deal with dirty cows. They stink. Cow poop. Yuck. You say...
You get used to it. Honestly. It stinks at first. Even when a cattle truck drives past in town when I'm not out in the country, it takes you by surprise and you think, oh, that stinks. But if you're out around it all the time, you don't smell it. It's
the smell of money. That's what people in America call it, the smell of money. What do you do with all that cow poop, by the way? Because there's a lot of it.
Nothing.
Do you like give it to fertilizer?
Cow poop's not the greatest fertilizer.
Really?
See,
I thought it was. So, like, what would be some of the myths that you think a city boy like me would have about a job like yours?
That I believe a lot of city people are under the impression that we don't care about the animals.
Okay. Do you?
We do. Of course, you do care about the animals, just...
But, I mean, how do you care about them? Because you're sending the slaughter eventually, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. But, well, we don't slaughter them. Obviously, we ship them off to the yards or sale yards. And necessarily what we do, we fatten them up when they're young. Usually they will, from us, once we sell them, they'll go to a feedlot or somewhere else to get fattened to be slaughtered.
What would be another stereotype besides that you're unethical? Would there be another stereotype you think a city boy like me would have? If not, no big
cowboy
deal.
Boots, big cowboy cats, boots, big buckles, so not necessarily all the time.
You're not a big buckle guy?
I do have a rather big buckle, actually.
Well, shut up. There you go. Then in other words, that stereotype is right. But why a big buckle is the question. What's up with that?
I don't know. It's just on my belt. It's a very thick leather belt.
So in other words, you have to look the part. You got to look the part, dude. James, I've got one last question before we end this little deep dish discussion here. I'm a Catholic priest. I know nothing about cattle. And in a way, our worlds are very different. But what do you think I, as a Catholic priest, can do to be a better priest for you?
I think that talking to young people who are just from the talk I just experienced, you would be able to connect with younger people that are in the stage of not sure where their faith is.
Sure.
What stage is that?
Sure.
And I think that...
But like for you personally, you're a cattle rancher. You are a grazier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what can I do to help you in your faith? How can I be a good priest for you? Besides eat more beef.
As a personal thing, I like conversation between a few people. That helps me a lot.
Yeah, but you didn't want to do this podcast with me.
Yeah, that's true. Very public.
But in other words, what I can do is maybe just keep people talking with each other.
That's right. Keep communication going.
If anybody around from the city in the United States wanted to come out and meet with you and you take them out on the ranch, would you do it?
Yeah.
All right. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. James Brennan, grazier, or as we would say in America, a rancher. He is in charge of 500 cattle a day. But more importantly, he's in charge of making sure that God's creation are being fed and cared for so that God's creation can care and feed us. We'll be back with more Shoot the Shiitake and another unique personality when we return in just a moment. If you're looking for a special gift for family, friends, and loved ones in this holiday season and even throughout the year, all you've got to do is visit my shop.fatherleofeeds.com where you can get my books with award-winning recipes and bite-sized theology, as well as an apron to help people remember that we're all called to be servants, and these are pretty fashionable and cool aprons. And you can also download some of our talks as well as presentations. And so these are the gifts that literally keep on giving because it feeds people, body, mind, and soul. So learn more at fatherleofeeds.com or shop.fatherleofeeds.com. And welcome back for another deep dish discussion. I am Father Leo, and right now I am back in Toowoomba, which is about 1,000 miles northwest of Sydney. And I have a senior constable of Toowoomba. Oh, not of Toowoomba. Where are you?
No, I'm not stationed in Toowoomba.
Sorry.
I'm from New South Wales. Which is a different state.
Oh, that's right. That's where Sydney is though, right?
Yeah, Sydney's in New South Wales.
So Steve Moran is joining us. He's a senior constable, also known as a cop.
Yeah, that's right.
But New South Wales, you're in a kind of like on the border of Victoria, which is a different state.
No.
And New South Wales. Sorry.
This state we're in is Queensland.
Queensland.
Yep. The town that I'm in is called Woodenbong. It's about 14 kilometres.
Woodenbong.
Yeah. It's a strange name.
Woodenbong.
Yes, it means...
That sounds like a drug paraphernalia, not that I would know.
Yes, exactly.
Is that what it is?
No.
Oh.
the word bong comes from the Aboriginal times.
Yeah.
It means like water. So we have billabongs.
Billabong.
Yeah. So
That's
little rivers and so forth.
Yeah.
And Woodenbong and other little towns near it, it's it has a meaning, I think, if one of the local Aboriginals told me it means wood ducks.
Oh, his daughter is correcting him. What is it again?
Wood ducks.
Wood ducks?
By the river.
By the river. Yeah. Okay, so you live at Wood Ducks by the river, and you are the police force, you and one other person. Tell us about Woodenbong.
Okay, well, we've been in Woodenbong for about 2 years. It's a small town with about, in the centre of town, with about 250 people in it.
250 people?
Yeah, so it's a very small town.
What's the closest city, the biggest city?
Well, the biggest city close to Woodenbong, we're very central actually, the main city or capital city would be Brisbane.
Okay.
So.
And Brisbane's a pretty big city.
That's right. So we're about 2 hours drive from Brisbane.
Okay. And so you go between Woodenbong and Brisbane. What's in between you?
There's a lot of countryside.
Countryside. So in other words, empty.
Yeah. And there's some little towns along the way. For example, if we went to go to Brisbane, I would drive through, across the border down to a place called Rathdowney and then up to another place called Bow Desert, which isn't too far from here.
But besides being small of only 200 people, because that's pretty small even for like Australia, right?
Yeah.
How would you describe Woodenbong?
Traditionally, it's a city that relied on the timber industry.
Timber, okay.
Yep, it's quite quiet compared to what it used to be because they don't log natural forests anymore.
Who comes out to Woodenbong? I mean, are people going out there because they're trying to get away from things or what?
We get, in fact, this upcoming weekend, there's a bike weekend, so dirt bikes come. So we do get twice a year a bike weekend, so we have tourists come in.
No, but who lives there?
Who lives there?
Yeah, who are the people who choose to live in Woodenbong?
Well, it's a unique place. Okay. It's one of the last places in New South Wales that was ever, I found this out the other day, settled by the white settlers.
Okay.
And that's about 100 years ago. So there's a large traditional Aboriginal community in Woodenbong. And
okay, Aboriginal.
Yeah, Aboriginals, yeah.
Let's hear a little bit about that, because are they similar to, as we would assume, say, Native Americans in America?
I don't know.
Okay.
There's
so
a lot
how
of
would you describe them as opposed to, say, the white settlers? So they are darker skin color?
Yeah, some of them are very dark skin.
Black?
Yeah, dark brown, black, yep.
Okay.
They're very athletic.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they're very athletic.
And they kind of have a lot of them are in Woodenbong?
Yeah.
And what do they do? Are they kind of, what's the industry of Woodenbong?
Well, at the moment, farming.
Farming, yeah. Okay. So they were farmers?
Unfortunately, a lot of the local original Australians, the Aboriginals, don't get involved with a lot of that sort of thing. They keep
really?
To themselves. Well, they still have their traditional lifestyle, you see.
Okay.
And they were subsistence lifestyle. So a lot of them have held onto that a fair bit. And it's very hard for them because when the white settlers came in, it wasn't very easy for them. So they do have a bit of time struggling to trust the white person.
And so that's why they need a cop.
It's not so much for them.
Okay.
See, I work for the New South Wales Police Force. Every state in Australia has their own police force. Whereas perhaps in the United States, you have lots of different police forces that are district.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, ours are done overseen by state governments.
Okay.
So we've got Queensland, where we are now, New South Wales, Victoria.
So let's just get to the meat of it all. You've got different police forces. I get it. Yeah. What do you do? It's 200 people there. I mean, like, how much trouble do they get into? I mean, are you keeping busy all night or what's up?
Well, there's only the two of us, as I said.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And we are 40 minutes from the closest town.
Yep. What kind of trouble are you having to deal with, in other words?
We get the same trouble they get everywhere else. There's domestic problems.
Okay, so domestic stuff.
Alcohol-related crime.
Okay.
We get theft.
Okay.
Stealing, obviously.
From the 200 people, or are these people coming in from outside? I mean, like, there's 200 people. You figure, I'm going to know you if you're going to steal my stuff.
Yeah, a lot of the time. Yeah, but you still got to prove it.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? A small town.
Yeah, you still
got to
be able to prove
crime.
Who's done it.
See, most but people would think in a small town it would be more peaceful, but it's not.
But we don't just look after the town.
Okay.
We drive up to the border, which is 40-odd minutes away, even though we're very close to the border. We tend to straddle it.
Okay.
To a town called Legume. We can then go close to a place that's Tenterfield. We don't go all the way to Tenterfield, but we can go very close to Tenterfield.
Okay.
Now, the position that I hold up until a few years ago was at a nearby town to Woodenbong called Urbanville.
Okay.
So there'd be two stations very close together, but they work side by side.
Okay.
But now there's only both of us in the one town, and we cover Urbanville as well.
And so are you guys driving around together, or are you in two separate cars?
Sometimes we work separately.
Okay.
And not on at the same time.
How many police cruisers or cars do you have?
One.
You have one?
One.
So one has to kind of sit in the office, or one drives his own car?
No, if we work together, we would go out on the road together.
Man, so like if you got an emergency, you'd be like, hey, all forces, and one guy
sometimes
shows up.
Yeah, look, we have Yeah, we've had some very interesting things. My first week in Woodenbong, there was a very, very serious car accident.
Okay.
And welcome to country life, coming from the city where you have street lights and you need any services. Sure. They're only just around the corner.
Wow.
We were very lucky that we had part of an army corps from Brisbane, actually. We were in town that day, so they were very helpful. But this car crash happened out on an open road. Within half an hour of us getting there, we got recalled to work. So it was after hours, after our shift had finished. It was pitch black. So we had the local rural fire. We had the local SES. We had the ambulance.
Okay. So in other words, because people are living there, you're going to run into the same problems, but there's something unique about just being in a small town.
Yeah.
What do you like about it, and what's the most challenging thing about it? Let's start with what you like.
There's two parts to that question. That's both very good. Coming from the city, the thing I like about working in a small place is, in a lot of ways, I can be my own boss.
Sure.
I've got a bit of freedom.
Absolutely.
I still have to answer to a sergeant and everything like that.
Of course.
I can work on my own. If I need to do paperwork, I get that done. If I've got things to do, I have to go and do those.
It's not a 9-to-5 job, though, is it?
No. I get to engage with the community.
Do they see you as a threat, or do they kind of know you? I'm like, you're Officer Steve.
Some would probably see me as a threat. Some would probably see me as the opposite to that.
Okay. What would be the challenging things? I've got several questions for you here. So what would be the challenging things that you find just being in a small town?
Well, there's an Aboriginal mission about 5-10 kilometres out of town.
Okay.
And I do like Aboriginal people very much.
Okay. Well, you better. Can they be challenging, though?
You're very.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, they tend to stick together. Even if they have rifts within their own community, they'll stick together against the police.
Oh.
It's very hard to try and lock someone up there because they hide them within the community.
Really?
Yeah. And we might know somebody's in there somewhere that we need to speak to or want to take to interview them or arrest them or something like that. And they're very protective.
Okay. So it's tribal.
Yeah, very much.
Okay. So that's a real frustration. And then how do the whites and the Aboriginal people interact? I mean, are they pretty good, or are there racial tensions that you have to deal with?
To a level, there is, yes.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting, because I thought Australia was pretty open-minded and pretty kind of relaxed.
We are in a lot of ways very relaxed.
Okay.
But there's historical issues there that...
Oh, of course.
I think politics intervenes at times and makes things worse.
Okay. Well, now, so Steve, you're a big guy. You would be what I would call a typical Australian, you know, kind of rugged, kind of out there. And you look like you'd be a good rugby player.
I played a little bit when I was younger.
I believe that.
Yeah.
What kind of cop are you? Are you a rugby cop, or are you a kind cop? What's your approach?
I've been in the job a long time now.
How long?
17 years.
Okay.
When I first started spiritually, I was going through a bit of an outward journey.
Okay.
When I joined the police. And I wasn't deliberately getting out of my faith. Policing can be a very antisocial job.
Of course, you deal
with a lot of things that are challenging.
Absolutely.
If you have your time off, you tend to spend it doing things you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, I drifted out of my faith a little bit. There was some tension within my family, where some parts of my family were involved in the charismatic renewal and others thought it was... And I was getting sort of stuck in the middle, and I had other things on my mind, and I had trouble getting into the police at first, and I was like many people, got angry with God at one stage, and and it took probably about 8 or 9 years to realise that it doesn't work.
Sure.
Because throughout my career.
So, but to answer the question, what kind of cop are you? Are you a good cop?
No, okay. I'm getting there.
All right.
I've always been a very understanding person.
Okay.
But the longer I stayed out of my faith, I struggled with a few things. Stress.
Okay.
And various other things, and I became very black and white with a lot of things. Very cynical.
Okay.
Then I got to the point where I realised that I wasn't doing it too good, and I had to have some time off, and management where I was working was not the best, and the Lord started to talk to me and brought me back in. So...
Back into the police force?
Back into my faith.
Okay, back into just...
To my faith, yeah. Now, when I say I took time off, I didn't leave the job.
Sure.
I just had to have some time off.
Understood.
Because it's a very mentally challenging or straining job.
I believe that.
So once I started to come back into my faith, and it's not an instantaneous thing because you're still very rigid with some of your things that you believe, but over the last 8 or 9 years, it's made me very relaxed, very understanding.
So you've become a nice cop.
I think I've always been a nice cop.
Okay, but so I'm trying to figure out, like...
Yeah, I've never been aggressive.
You've never been aggressive. Nah. But you were probably just not the best version of yourself until you got
back
to your
faith. Yeah, I think that's probably right. And it took a while for me to get down to that. And
Sure.
Now I've got a lot of friends in the job I do, especially in the town that's nearby to us. And One guy in particular is a little bit more boisterous to me. So when we work together, I suppose we have a little good
banter.
Yeah, we do.
You could take him though, I bet.
Yeah, but he's in the way he polices a little bit more rugged than the way I do it. And
he's your partner though. He's the only other guy.
Yeah, but if we do night shifts sometimes separately, I might team up with someone from the nearby town called Kyogle.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you're not completely just the two of you together.
No, we do spread our wings a little bit. So we do cover a lot of area and some days.
By the way, folks, I did give a 1970s reference of Starsky and Hutch, but that's another story.
No, that's all right. Now we can drive up to 300 or 400 kilometers in a shift.
Whoa.
Yeah, so that's a long way.
So in other words, the kind of police officer you are now had something to do with how your faith has formed you to be a better person.
Absolutely.
So are you a merciful cop? Like do you let people go? Like, oh, you're speeding. You were going, 20 kilometers over the speed limit. What do you do with that?
Oh, it's case by case basis.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be understanding.
Thank God for that.
We have what they call original authority. So if you decide to give somebody a warning or whatever, as long as you can justify what you do, you can give somebody a warning.
How is the job, because you told me how the faith has informed your job. How has your job informed your faith?
Well, the first thing I can say is I see that there's a very godless society.
Okay. Very true.
Yeah. A lot of people do things based on it, not having any faith in God or anything like that. It's very much live in the moment, or someone's done the wrong thing by me, I'm going to do the wrong thing back sort of aspect. Some people are reaching out for something. They always want to belong.
Sure.
Yeah. So if there's groups like gangs or whatever, they're looking to belong to something.
Gangs?
Yeah.
Literally 200 people?
No, we're not so much in the town.
Okay. But around. Yeah, you've got a big area.
Big picture.
Got it. Okay.
Outside of Woodenbong, there's gangs. And we do get a lot of bikies and bikers pass through town.
Sure, sure. Mm.
So sometimes we do have to get other resources to assist.
Okay. So your job has kind of has informed your faith by recognizing that there is evil and there's a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And more importantly, you as a police officer, a constable, senior constable.
Yeah.
What do you think your ultimate job is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've got to enforce the law. And sometimes when you're in a little town, you have to, I found that you need to perhaps be a little lenient to start with and work your way up.
Got it.
You can't go in to any situation on a heightened level and try and retract down.
Sure.
So if the town knows what sort of person you are, they may try and take advantage of you individually, but as long as you're consistent with how you work and you give people chances to do the right thing or whatever, eventually you get to a point where you have to take some action. But if it's not the first port of call, then you've worked your way up.
Yeah.
But I'm also a peacekeeper in some ways.
That's very true.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things that go on that...
Well, if you walked into a bar, I would probably, and they were acting up. With your size, I would probably back down pretty quick.
Yeah, well, that's something that I suppose I'm lucky.
Yeah, you are. Like if I walked in, they'd be like, ha! You.
Well, the guy I work with, Luke, he's not so tall.
Okay.
So his perspective would be a little bit different to mine.
Sure.
But you see, when I get up in the morning, I don't look in the mirror and see that I'm a big angry man or I'm a big bloke or anything like that.
No, sure.
I just see my...
So let me just ask this one final question here as we're kind of just shooting the shiitake and I'm learning a little bit more about the other areas of Australia because we all know about Sydney, we know about Melbourne, Adelaide, we might know about Perth, we might know about the Outback, but there's real life that occurs kind of in the middle of it all.
Yeah.
And it's a little quieter, but it's still very human.
Yeah.
You are here at this kind of a conference or a talk that I'm giving here in Toowoomba. But I think what I want to do is I want to ask you, how can I... be of assistance to you, a good priest for you? What do you think I can do to be of help to you?
Well, I think being a priest is helpful. Without priests, we don't have anyone to administer the sacraments. And this is something that I've always said when people attack the church to me. I say that priests are priests. They're human beings first and foremost. They can make mistakes. Not all priests are what the Lord would even intend, but neither was Judas.
Sure.
But anyone who can administer the sacraments to me individually or as a group, or who could attend a scene where someone's dying and assist with that person, or assist me spiritually, hear my confessions, help me if I'm having issues. And you mentioned during your talk that some of the best counselling people can get is in the confessional, and that is very sadly something that we see in Australia that is not very commonplace these days, because we tend to have a system of government that means if you want to give any form of counselling, you have to be an expert or a qualified counsellor, and people even in the faith would go and see somebody that's not even religious and get advice on some of their issues that would be contrary to
okay.
their conscience.
Well,
so I find that having priests around that know the rubrics of Catholicism and the doctrines and know that we're all broken one way or another.
Yeah.
If I need to go and speak to whether it's yourself or Father Eric at Kyogle or anyone like that, that I know that I'm going to get an answer that is very spiritual and come from God.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I guess what I've got to do is when I return, come back with my carry-out order. But I think more importantly, just being a presence of peacekeeping, which is what you think your job is, but also in the same time, upholding the law, which is why I'm grateful to my special guest. You know,
can I
not
just
only
say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, when you said that I'm a big bloke, oh, I haven't always been big.
Oh, you're a big guy, yeah.
My last year of school, I was actually still fairly short, so I grew afterwards. I don't view myself as a big bloke.
Uh-huh.
So I think people probably see me as a big bloke.
Uh-huh. And by the way, bloke, people aren't, I mean, like, I had no idea what a bloke was for many years.
Dude.
That just means a guy, yeah,
it's
dude. Yeah, yeah, you're a big dude.
So, yeah, I don't always notice that I'm big.
Sure.
So people will see me outwards looking in.
Yeah, you definitely look like a cop.
And maybe they're like intimidated by my size.
Sure.
Which is probably the best thing I've got.
Sure.
But I don't know I'm big.
Sure.
So I don't speak with a loud voice and don't go throwing my fists around. So
sure.
Maybe that's something that I'm able to use to my advantage.
Yeah, and people are afraid of my size all the time. I'm kidding with you.
No, but some people who are smaller can fight better.
Yeah, well, that's a fact.
Yeah, yeah, so
they're scrappy.
I try and use my voice a bit better and talk to people. It doesn't always work because some people just you can't reason with them. Other people do, but I think my size is something that works to my advantage without me using it in the wrong way, I think.
That's right. So your presence to be not only an upholder of justice, but to keep the peace. A special guest here, Senior Constable Stephen. And have a great time in Woodenbong.
Yeah.
And more importantly, be safe out there. I'll be back with my carry-out order in just a moment from the land down under. This week, for our premium content subscribers, that's people who donate $10 or more each month, they will be receiving a very unique talk from Rachel Leininger. She is a youth minister that puts on retreats for young people, and it's amazing to hear the work and the effect that they have on our students just by bringing them on a retreat. So we learn all about retreats, conversion stories, and of course, ways that we can help inform our young people about the love of God. So please make sure that you tell family and friends about our show, encourage them to be premium subscribers, and they're going to get special content each week. Just go to shootthesheetake.com. And welcome back for my carry-out order here on Shoot the Shiitake. This is me, Father Leo, and I'm so glad that you had a chance to at least listen in on some of the conversations that I've had with people who I meet in some of my incredibly interesting journeys. And yeah, I do have some interesting journeys. I mean, how many people even knew what Toowoomba was, you know? Like, I had no idea. And just to be able to go all the way out there as I'm flying in, I'm wondering, where am I going? And who are the people who are going to come to a talk in the middle of a weekday? And I got to tell you, my mind was absolutely blown of the number of people who came to this talk. Now, granted, it wasn't huge by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm going to just tell you something right off the bat. Australia, in my honest opinion, and I've talked with many people involved in evangelization and involved in church circles in Australia and around that country of Australia, they agree with me when I say that evangelization is about 30 to 40 years behind the United States. And what do I mean by that? Well, that just basically means that evangelization and promoting the efforts of Catholicism is where we kind of were in the United States about 30 or 40 years ago. And it was only because of the kind of evangelical movement of the charismatic renewal that we were able to be a little bit more evangelical. And when I say that, I'm not talking about Protestantism. I'm talking about simply being more charismatic, allowing people to experience the kerygma, which is basically the basic encounter of faith, you know, getting to know who Jesus is. And I think oftentimes when we think of faith, we always like to kind of lock it in to almost debate about dogma, doctrines, and discourses that kind of lead to division. I know that was like four D's, but it's true. I think when people think about Catholic faith, they think of dogma, doctrine, you know, debates and divisions. And that's really unfortunate because when I went to Toowoomba, a pretty small-ish city in the northwest of Sydney, Australia, about 1,000 kilometers, is about an hour and a half plane ride. And as I was flying out there, again, wondering who would even show up, I was surprised to see the number of young people that were there. Now, when I say young, it's only because I'm getting older. If they're like over 25, in my opinion, they're young. If they're under 25, they're kids, okay? That's just kind of my opinion. But like I gave 3 talks that day and the numbers grew throughout the day. And what was shocking was how many people showed up at the beginning of the talk, which was basically mid-morning in Toowoomba. And then we had another discussion after lunch, and then we had something after dinner. So that's kind of how it was. Perusiamedia.com was the host who brought me out. They do great work. And let me just tell you what I learned from my experience of talking to Wes, to James, and to Constable Steve, Officer Steve, I guess is what I'm going to call him, is that they're just normal blokes. And that word bloke, I know what you know what that means by now. It just means dude. It just means a normal guy. And they might consider themselves blokes, but they're kind of, in a way, very different from my experience. Yet, granted, they've got very unique accents. And, you know, the Australian accent is just kind of cool. And everyone in Australia says, what accent? And let's just admit it, even in Australia, they have just as many accents as we do in America. You can tell if someone's from Boston, New York, or if they're from the South. And that's the same thing true over there. And so really one of the things that I learned was as different as they are, they're exactly like we are. You know, they all have the same struggles. They all have the same issues. You know, these men who just happened to agree to be interviewed because I just pulled them aside was because they were willing, but they also have unique experiences. I mean, how many ranchers do you get to interview, especially in Australia? You know, I mean, when I was talking to James, first of all, to have a young man there, very interesting to see that he was willing to kind of grow in his faith. And then to hear what he goes through day in and day out, and how just content he is to do that kind of work. I'll be honest, I don't know if I can do it. I don't think I'm tough enough, to be honest with you. But yet, even in his toughness as a young man and as a rancher or a grazier, he's a very gentle soul. I saw him again at one of the other talks in the evening, and he brought his girlfriend. You know, at least girlfriend at the time. Well, I think girlfriend, yeah. And it was just kind of interesting to see what his role is in that relationship. He's helping his girlfriend to grow in faith, and I think she helps him to grow in faith. And when you're out there on the ranch, you got to be able to come home to something that's more human. I mean, like if you're working with animals all day, I get it, you know. They depend on you and they're not going to fight back. Well, they might, but, you know, not argue. They're not going to make you emotionally argumentative like a relationship would. But when you get to the point where you just simply have to kind of develop a relationship with someone, I'm glad that James was at least using faith as a basis for that ongoing development of relationships. And then, of course, just being a young man, being very content to be out there on a ranch, I just think that that was cool. So what did I get from that conversation? Well, first of all, a lot of hope that he was even coming to the talk and that he was willing to grow in faith. 2, that even though he said he was pretty shy, he had some pretty interesting things to share with me, and whether he knew it or not, he was teaching me a lot about humility and what it means to have to just be committed and devoted to hard physical manual labor. And so I was very impressed by that. And then also, I think the one thing that I learned from him was just that even though he was out there and he was doing some hard manual labor, he was a gentleman. He was really a gentleman, gentle soul, gentle, you know, personality. And he's not what I would consider a rancher. Kind of, you know, like if I think of the rancher type, almost a Marlboro man, and they'd be kind of gruff and rough. Nope, not this guy. Gentle soul. That might be that Australian nice coming through. Speaking of Australian nice, oh my gosh, Constable Stephen, big guy. Now, the reason why I wanted to interview him is because he told me during the break, as we were just kind of chit-chatting and I was, you know, meeting some of the people around there, he was a cop. Now, they call themselves constable. That just sounds so much more dignified, doesn't it? Holy cow. Things are just a little bit more dignified out in Australia. But he was telling me that he only has like under 300 people in his city where he is the officer. And just he and another fellow going out there and kind of defending their city and protecting the citizens and also obviously deterring crime by his presence. And here's one of the things that I learned. His presence could scare me. So let me just tell you a story about when I was there, he was asking me some pretty poignant questions about the Catholic Church, about orthodoxy. He was obviously upset with some of the things that happened in the Catholic Church, especially in terms of the scandals and what he would call as perceived liberalism. And he might be right. I mean, I just don't know the situation well enough. I do know that his question indicated that there had been some struggles that he had with maybe a priest or a bishop. But, you know, when he was asking me those questions, they were coming on pretty strong. And even though I'm a little guy, I am, as he described it, you know, I'm a pretty good fighter, not just physically, but verbally. And so we entered into a little bit of a debate during the Q&A. This was before I knew he was a cop. But that wouldn't change anything anyway, in my opinion. But we were just kind of going back and forth. And at one point, I just simply had to say to him, you know, the way you're coming across is going to make it hard for me to want to answer questions just because it doesn't seem like we really are trying to have a conversation, but more of a debate. And that's just not going to be helpful, at least in this stage of the game, when I was just simply doing Q&A. But after we kind of had that discussion, I said, hey, let's make sure you and I get lunch and we can sit and talk about this more. And lo and behold, that's exactly what we did. That's exactly where this show came about, because at lunch, I was sitting next to James, and across from me, I was sitting next to the constable. Pretty cool. And during that lunch conversation, that's where I kind of found his heart. And his heart is just a man who's just trying to do the right thing, but he faces a lot of struggles, especially with people who just want to break the law, but also with even people who have the responsibility to uphold the law. He was talking with me specifically about the struggles he sees with the Catholic Church and how the Catholic Church doesn't, you know, sometimes follow its own rules. And so in my questions with him during my conversation, and you heard it, I kind of wanted to ask him if he was a good cop or a bad cop. And he's basically said he had to just kind of strike a balance. And there, ladies and gentlemen, is what I got as a carryout order from me and my conversations with the constable. You know, to follow the rules, that's not always easy, even for ourselves. I mean, how often do I always go the speed limit? You know, the speed limit is for me the speed minimum. And so the idea of following all the rules, I'm just grateful that there are good cops who are obviously willing to let me go if I go a little over the speed limit. And I'm also, in a way, grateful for the bad cops who kind of keep me in check to make sure that I am, as much as I can, be obeying the rules. And why? Simply because I just think that when it comes to faith, and that's what these guys were here for, to learn about the faith, there's going to be a need for a little bit of wiggle room. There just is. You know, we can't treat our faith as black and white only. I think what these guys did, two blokes, two big dudes, really, they showed there was a gentle side to approach things, whether it be in conversation or just even in demeanor. And while it's going to be easy to maybe judge a book by the cover, these guys are certainly gentlemen, but he's a cop and the other was a rancher. They didn't look like they'd be gentlemen, but guess what? They were, so I can't judge the book by the cover. But more importantly, I've got to remember that if I am approaching something that is different from me, maybe I got to approach it in a more gentle way. That's kind of what I got. These men were true gentlemen. Even though they're working in more challenging situations, you know, two thumbs up to them. They showed me what it's like to not be just a bloke, but an Australian gentleman. So that's my carry out order. I got to be more of a gentleman. You know, people might see me as a Filipino, as someone who's always going to be like super shy, more timid, and everything is like, yes, father, yes, padre, yes, padre, which is kind of like the joke of the Filipinos when they meet a priest is yes, padre. But, you know, I'm not that way at all. In fact, I can be pretty aggressive. And I think what I need to do is just become more of a gentleman at all times, like these guys showed me. And faith is going to be certainly a part of it. So that's my carry out order. I've got to be a little bit more gentle in a world that is kind of rough and ugly these days. And I hope that this carry out order has helped you. And I hope you at least enjoyed these honest conversation with these two blokes. Remember, for our premium subscribers, you're going to hear an incredible story of a conversion named Wes Hitzke. This guy used to bash Catholics, and now he's one of the biggest defenders of it. It's such a great story, and I hope that you get a chance to hear it. To do so, we definitely could use your support by donating $10 or more each month, and you'll get all of this premium subscription material directly sent to your mailbox. So between now and the next time we meet, thank you for listening, and more importantly, stay hungry. And we hope you enjoyed this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, brought to you by PerusiaMedia.com. They are a group that brings ministries together to inform, inspire, and invigorate Australian Catholics. So you want to check out them and all of their materials at PerusiaMedia.com. And as always, we thank you for listening. Make sure you tell family and friends to listen, to subscribe, and please be generous to support us with $10 or more each month. You get premium content delivered right to your mailbox, and you can learn all about that and to support our conversation, which brings about conversion, by going to shootthesheetaki.com. That's shootthesheetaki, that's two eyes in shiitake.com.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.